This is the PubRight Podcast, a service of the Arbortex community.
Good morning. We've got Chris Western from T-Format with us this morning. He is a longtime part of 3B2 and APP and Advent and comes from it for 16 years. Isn't that right, Chris?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. just to give you a little bit of background. Hello, everybody. I started in graphic design, really, and then ended up getting a job as a typesetter to pay off the student debt, introduced to 3B2, and the rest is history, really.
Wow.
I started with Advent Publishing, having been a typesetter for a number of years with the 3B2 in 1998, really to reinvigorate their documentation. And so I ended up rewriting a lot of the documentation and redesigning XML information architecture to really support all their documentation, which is quite an interesting project.
So you wrote the help files for 3B2?
Up to version 9, yes. All of that was then taken into the current help system now, which was a bit of improvement in the searching
awesome.
Capabilities and things like that. So it really helped me to get to grips with all the interesting quirks and features inside the application to actually write it and talk to the programmers. And so that was good, yeah.
That's cool. So you were producing it with 3B2, the help files,
yes.
too. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So for a number of years, that was what I was doing. And progressed through Advent. I think I was there for about 8 years, doing a lot of different roles there, training, customer services, support,
cool.
Dabbling in projects and presenting, things like that. So, that's where I got to know the beast of 3B2, and since then...
It right there.
Yeah. So since then, PTC took over, and I decided to... Start up my venture with an ex-colleague of mine in pinpoint composition. For a couple of years, we were providing services and training and things like that on 3B2 during the development stages, I guess, of the version 10. And we then joined with GPSL, and I helped set up the foundations of the solutions business and the guys and the technical team they have there. So,
wow, very cool.
Yes, and here I am today in a slightly different tangent with T-Format Limited and trying to look after the 3B2 user base. I've got to stop calling it 3B2 APP user base here in the UK and the rest of the Europe. So,
excellent. So you did. So no wonder you know all about how to learn and come up to speed with 3B2 or APP because you did.
Yes, yeah, essentially, I was given a morning's introduction to 3B2 version 6 and then told to get on typesetting journal, so that helped me learn pretty quick.
Wow.
And along with the technical documentation, I've while I was in Pinpoint, I rewrote all the training documentation, so that really gave me a good sort of insight and angles onto how people need to learn the product really in all the different directions that people come from. So,
So how would somebody get started other than, you know, dropping them into the pool?
I think it's quite an interesting time because of the integration that's now available. You can come at 3B2 from a number of different angles, and for existing users or users of Stylo, you can get the nice and easy introduction through the interface, and then obviously if you need to learn more, you start to have to go into the source edits and to learn JavaScript and the FOM model, so that's one angle. Obviously coming from the other side of 3B2, if you were to use 3B2 in a desktop environment and sort of develop your templates without Styler, then you've also got the JavaScript angle but without the nice GUI and everything to start on. So there's a number of different angles and approaches to attack it, really.
I have heard that 3B2 that originally approached formatting in a completely different way than, say, the Arbortex Fosse guys went at it.
Yeah.
Is that a fair statement? Can you
I think so.
Explain it to me?
Well, essentially, it started life as a desktop application, and then grew into to what it is today. The server versions and the sort of the back end black box came along later on, once they'd added scripting and various other technologies into the application. So it's natively supporting HTML and XML. And there's no sort of proprietary upfront conversion or anything like that. It's you load in your XML, and essentially what happens is the tags or the elements have a mapping to control the formatting. So inside those maps, you'd have got the either the JavaScript code now or the original through to processing instructions to control the style and the dynamic layout and things like that. So yeah, its background's really sort of desktop, but it's grown into the server environment, so I think that's quite a different approach to the other right. Fosse aspects of things. So, yeah,
I don't think Fosse quite really was a one-to-one mapping.
Yeah, yeah. My experience with Fosse is pretty limited in terms of the Arbortex software, but from what I understand, it's yeah, it's a very different beast to the way 3x2 approaches things. So it was quite an interesting fit to try and get those two to talk together. But they seem to have achieved it, and I'm looking forward to the 10.1, which is going to have even more, I think, additional features. So, yeah.
Well, so what's one of the... if you were coming at it fresh, new, because we're talking to a lot of new customers too... Mm-hmm. What's the one thing they should keep in mind, or how should they begin to think about formatting when they're thinking about 3x2?
I think it really depends on which angle you're coming from, and there's, you know, the application works the same in any template or style sheet that you create. Now, if you come from Styler and produce it that way, it will create a slightly different template to as if you were to create it by hand in the 3x2 desktop environment. But essentially, it's sorry, Liz, going to remind me of the question again. Yeah.
So, when you're starting fresh and you don't really know how to do style sheets and templates, how, when I started doing, even with XSL or FO, it's a different way of thinking about things.
Yeah.
So somebody who's coming into this kind of thing fresh and has never done it before, mm-hmm. what kind of advice can you give to them, or how can you help them, you know, get their arms around it and think about what they're trying to do and how to do it?
I think one of the best ways to think about 3x2 is really, this term's bandied around all the time, but essentially I think of it as a formatting engine with a bunch of tools wrapped around it. So there's a big toolbox of different things and different tools that you can apply to your documents, but essentially underneath it's just a formatting engine. That formatting engine obviously processes the tag data in a linear fashion down the data stream. Now, how you approach learning the application is one thing. There's a set of courses. Now, generally, in the past, there's been the sort of learning curve has been through these foundation courses. We start with the foundation, and then we move on to the showstrings. There's a showstrings, which is a sort of a dynamic text language. It's processing language with inside 3x2 to work out dynamic text. There's scripting. There's all sorts of different vertical features that you can learn. So in the traditional sense, you take most of these courses, which is we're talking sort of about 4 weeks of scripted courses. Okay. Then you'd probably have some kind of mentoring or learning curve to get to grips with your first job. This is kind of okay, but it learns you. It teaches you the tool sets, but it doesn't really teach you how to bolt them and apply them all together. That really comes with experience and working closely with a knowledgeable partner. So to get to grips with it, I think there's always room for the foundation course, and that teaches you really about the interface of 3B2, the different modes that you can work in, how pages are put together, how you dynamically apply styles and formatting and page sequences, for example. All those fundamentals are really important. I think even if you're coming from the styler angle and you've got to know some of the JavaScript, you can do source edits. If you ever want to do anything more than the styler interface will allow you to do, it's good to have a knowledge of the back end of how 3B2 is going to work and how it puts these down on a page. So as a first point, I think, you know, an introduction or a course like the foundation training is a great introduction. So
excellent. So, well, 4 weeks of courses really isn't bad for as complex as 3B2 is.
I think it's not bad, but it depends on the user themselves. You know, some of the larger companies can afford to stop production, take their entire team out and dedicate 4 weeks plus all the back-end learning and experience to learning a system like that. Generally speaking, it depends on what the user wants to do, how deep they want to go. I would tend to look at a foundation course as the basis, and then a second week of kind of tailored or customized training, depending on what they're going to do with it at the back end. You know, whether they might not need to know about all the things that the scripted courses tell you, so there's no need to, you know, fill your brain up with all syntax and features if you're not going to use it. So generally speaking, there's a tailored or customized mentoring period at the back end of the foundation, which is helps you get quick start.
Excellent.
Rather than the long-winded approach.
Nobody can take 4 weeks off from their job. Everyone has deliverables, so that seems like a really positive way to take pieces of it and learn over time.
Exactly. Yeah. In the past, we've found that you know, if you do the full training session, everybody's brain is so fried by the end of sort of 3 weeks or 4 weeks that, you know, only half of it sticks, and you come to sit down in front of it the next morning and think, what did I learn on day one? How do I put a page down and all these kind of things? So it's much better to break it up into manageable chunks because of the nature of it is such a large toolbox of features, and you don't need to know it all necessarily. And a lot of it can come with during the development and adding on to your knowledge rather than cramming it all in at the beginning.
So what kinds of tools are in the toolbox?
Does
APP have? Like, what distinguishes APP from everything else?
I think, its strength, it used to be a desktop application, but I think its strength has really come away from that into the black box automated pagination engine. In terms of its tool sets, it's really, there are defined features. So, for example, it's all macro-based. You can run a single command with a number of parameters to execute this feature or a combination of features. Now that's quite logical and structural in a way where you can learn it. And when I was documenting 3B2, you know, we had up to sort of 2,000 macros for all different purposes, used in different contexts, some for scripting, some for inline processing instructions, some control stream keywords, for example. You're never going to get your head around all these things and learn them all. In terms of
what kinds of categories? Give me a sampling. We're selling 3B2 here. Give me a sample.
Well, not wanting to scare everybody off, obviously these macros are all available there for different purposes. So say you're putting a frame down on the page, you'll have a macro to do that and draw it. The macro can be run via a script. It can be accessed by the new FOM model in different ways. So there's lots of different categories of macros and access to the application. I've forgotten where I was going. There was an original direction, but it went off to the side there when we started talking about it.
You're t- types of formats you were talking about, laying down a frame.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, the types of tools and things available. So you've got the basic composition engine with processing XML data. It does it in a very similar way. The tags are mapped for style, context, and things like that. Once you get beyond that, you've got things like the showstring language. If you wanted an element to behave in a dynamic way or trigger certain things off different attributes, for example, that's when you'd have to know a little bit more than just the direct macros. You'd have to get into a language called showstrings, which is a processing language to dynamically control, and it involves basic things like jumps and loops and things like that to control the data. And then beyond that, you've got the different vertical markets that 3b2 has been used in. Traditionally, for a long time, it's been very strong in STM production.
Okay.
Just because of the flexible nature of how you can lay out your pages and dynamically control the document layout, that's been the strong areas, along with the support for tech, MathML,
nice.
Things like that. So in the financial markets, you've got Edgar output, for example.
Uh-huh.
And even harking back to 3b2's old days, you've got imposition, color separations, and all those kind of printing options as well. So, I mean, just to name but a few, but it's got different features for different markets. And but like I say, you don't need all of them. It's this case of what do I need to know to get this going? And then let's look at some funky stuff later down the line as I need it. So that's how I think of it.
There we go. That was what I was going to ask next. What kind of verticals do you usually see it in? And what's the most interesting one that you've done?
Well, I mean, I've been involved in a number of different projects for different angles. It may be of training, or it may be helping out in looking at the development side of things. There's been financial, which is very table heavy, very complex tables. STM, legal, tech doc. CJK has been quite an interesting one for legal journals using multiple languages. That was quite an interesting one. But everything that I've seen or touched has a different approach to it and a different set of tools. Apart from the core, you've got a core set that most people will use, and then additional ones on top of that that have been different for every type of work, and sometimes different customers. So all depends on their requirements and what they want to do.
So if I'm just, how do I know that I need to move to APP, right? Usually it's you're trying to do something that's hard, mm-hmm. and you can't do it in Styler or Fosse, and that's the trigger to go to APP. What kind of situations are those?
I think, having to know a little bit more about the Fosse capabilities, but I would imagine tricky dynamic layouts, and I think one of the biggest selling points when we first had the integration was the manual touch-up option in APP. That was always talked about, and for us, we didn't think, what's this? There's nothing new to us. But obviously, coming from the server angle, this is quite an interesting development. And in the different markets, if you wanted to have 95% automated composition, and then there are some aspects which you literally just cannot nail down with logical rules. It's down to the eye, that if the editor decides they want that there for no reason whatsoever, I just like the look of it. Those kinds of things, you might need to move to. But there's probably a host of different reasons why you'd want to extend into APP, and just the flexibility I think it gives you beyond the capabilities you have at the moment. Yeah.
Right. The touch-up is really, that's the thing I remember when Arbortext acquired Advent in 2005, I think.
Yeah, I think it was back then.
We all got to our first view of the product at the big Arbortext user conference that year at Disney.
Yeah.
There were 800 people. And I remember seeing the touch-up, because that was something that, you know, they had told us, no, you can't do that. There's no way you're going to ever be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's that in-between page intermediary period. You can't see it, touch it, do anything with it, forget it.
Yeah.
And we saw that and went, oh, my God, what is this?
Yeah. Well, it's quite an interesting one that we never thought – you know, it was a particular strength, but I guess in the way, because it came from the desktop application, and the server kind of grew out of the desktop, then there was always this interaction capability. Even if on the desktop, you can still automate the templates. You use the desktop environment to really build your templates, which are then used on the server version. So you'd always see the interactive version, and you can run scripts and you can watch it on the screen automatically composing. And then it just stops at the end. You can go back and fiddle with your pages and just reformat or reprint the output. So I think that's why it's still there. And it's obviously required by a number of people and good strength to retain. So
that's very cool. Anyway, that's for sure. So you are trying to revitalize the 3B2 community. I understand you guys used to have big conferences all the time.
Yeah, when Advent was still looking after the 3B2, they used to have regular user meetings, and I think in the early 2000s they had quite a few, and I think 2004 or 2005, I think, was probably the last one that they did before it became amalgamated, and then sort of, I don't know, got a little bit lost in the whole pack of products that were out there before people knew what it was. So I mean, I've taken a slightly different direction from the main solutions area now, and I'm trying to just to get out there and getting back in touch with the existing 3B2 users, reinvigorate and offer slightly more practical support to people that commonly use the application, because it's quite such a complex product. Everybody has different requirements in their support. It's not something that you can generally support in terms of like a tick box, this is the answer for a lot of the things. It's having a little bit of knowledge there that really helps a lot of the customers. So we're looking to try and reinvigorate, and obviously with the integration Arbitext, to help out as much as you can the existing Arbitext community as they get to know the product.
Believe me, we're all looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I mean, when over the last year, when I had a chance to talk to anyone, I said, hey, you know, we get to see this now. And they're like, really? I've been waiting to see that for 5 years.
Yes, yeah. It has been a long time coming, I think. But I guess the whole process got slightly slowed down when PTC took over and just sort of assessing what it was about. But no, it's quite exciting. I think it should be really interesting to see lots of the different markets working together and the different user bases coming to know this product we know and love. So.
So, and you had a big event last week.
Yes, we decided to go along to the online information exhibition, which was held in London Olympia. We knew that some of the competitors were going to be there, and it was quite interesting to sort of show the face of APP and Arbitext at these things. It was quite interesting. It was a little busier than I expected. They had a dedicated XML pavilion up there, which was kind of grouped us all together, and we gave a short preview of APP and V10, and we had some of the existing customers come along and some new faces just having a look. So
nice.
It was interesting. Yeah. Nice. I hope to do more of that in the future. So
and you're holding a user conference in Europe.
Yes, right? We are. Yes, in the spring we are running a users meeting for the APP users out there. Eventually, I'd hope that we may be able to partner up with other people in the community and have a general Arbitext users meeting in Europe. I think these would take place at the moment in different pockets, different distributors, and various things like that. But we're doing it for the APP user group, and it's really going to be an in-depth introduction to version 10. Simon Taylor and some of the PTC guys are come along to talk, and we're doing it in collaboration and partnership with our partner in Germany, DataCopy, who also do their own user meetings in Germany. So
nice.
Yes, it's going to be interesting, I hope.
So, and is DataCopy used to be Advent also?
Kind of the guys that run DataCopy, they I think, yeah, without exception, all of them used to work for Advent as the German office of Advent,
okay.
Because there was a UK office and a German office, and at one time and a US office as well. So it's all pretty incestuous there.
That's good, right?
Yes,
those are the guys who grew up with it, know it, that it speaks very well.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, it's one of those things that you either love it or hate it. I don't know if you've got a Fraser, you know, it's one of those, the Marmite product, I think. but we seem to love it, and we can't let it go. So we're really interested and excited about the new integration for LabTech. So,
very cool.
It should be good times.
So am I. I've been trying to, we got a little bit of chance to play with it. Just on our, we helped GPSL on a project. We're mostly traditional ArborText partner, and so it's exciting to get to touch it and play with it.
Yeah, there's a new button.
It's hard to get started. You know, it's hard to get those. You know, like, oh well, I can do it this way. How? You know, what do I?
Yeah.
How do I do something interesting just to try it out?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's a whole different angle, isn't it? A different beast to tackle. So,
yeah. What would be a good thing for somebody to wet their feet with, right? Something you can do in any of the publishing engines, but you could try it in 3B2, and it's a pretty easy thing to see how it works. I don't know if there is such a thing.
Well, I guess just any basic tech doc is probably one of the simplest areas. Everybody knows DocBook, and any XML stream can be run into the template. It all depends on what you want to do with it. But I guess there's a capability from Styler that you can create a document and save out the APP template out the back of it. So that might help users get to know some of the extended capabilities. Obviously, you've got to, from within Styler, if you don't have the 3B2 desktop, you've got to extend it using the source edits and the FOM models. So that is documented, I believe, at the moment. But it's a learning curve without seeing the desktop in front of you, you know, to play with it.
What's the usual learning curve for the desktop version?
It depends on the capabilities, I think, of the users already. If you for example, I've done training on people that have barely used a computer, and compared to some guys that have programming experience and used other publishing applications, and their learning curve is much, much quicker. So it depends on your background and how much you know already, but generally speaking, like we said, the 4 weeks of standard training, I'd expect you could probably expedite that down to 2, and then you'd have, I don't know, say 2 to 6 months of practical hands-on experience in developing with the desktop version, probably alongside some experienced developers before you could realistically take on a complex project on your own.
Is it better if your background is typesetting or programming?
That's a bone of contention, I think, in a few people. I've never really had any programming. I think if my maths teacher realised I was doing any scripting or some of the stuff I was doing today, he'd have a fright. But my experience in typesetting has definitely been an advantage, I think, in terms of what I need to put on the page and some of the interesting typographical handling that can be done with the product. If you're going to go into the more complex side of the templates, sort of interacting with databases, using it as a black box in server environment, then I think, yes, definitely the programming logics and the way you apply your code in 3v2 is very useful to have that some of that experience down there.
But even
if it's just coming from programming websites, just, you know, basic HTML, bit of JavaScript here and there, bit of CSS, that gives you some insights. So it wouldn't have to be necessarily a fully fledged C++ programmer, for example, to get the logical steps out in your mind. I think even that level could be helpful.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Always good to know. Because when I started doing it, I had not made templates. I had not, well, I mean, in like FrameMaker or Word or any of that.
Yeah.
Really hadn't done any of that. But the woman who I was paired with came up through the typesetting background. And together we could figure things out. But, you know, I'm calling things like leading, letting, you know, and I'm getting the terms wrong because it's not the background I know. And it helped a lot to have somebody who did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And some of those typesetting terms are still inside the product. And as well as the programming terms and the typesetting terms, you've got the Anglo-American differences in the different things. And, you know, you'll have to spell color wrong a few times. I'm sure there's just to get it to work, you know. But I believe there is a updated interface to reflect those language differences. So
That's great. And I understand that it's particularly good at different kinds of languages.
Yes, that's
different
that's
character sets.
Indeed, yeah, that's a big strength. Unicode was introduced back in version 7, but I think it never really came into its own until sort of the late 8s and early 9s that there were enough fonts around, really, for us people to actually start using it practically. That was always a problem, that you try to use Unicode and half your characters missing, or they're just square boxes on the page. So there are features to help you work around those shortfalls in some of the fonts, but they've just recently added Thai support to version 10, and it's used quite extensively in a number of different customers over in Asia, Japan, and China. I think they use it as well. So it's the Arabic, Chinese, different layouts, Ruby formats, Kanji characters. They're all supported and I think used quite successfully in a number of implementations. So, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. What's your favorite thing about APP? What's the feature you like the best?
The feature, I think there's so many. I think just the approach, probably not the best terminology, but the hackability. the fact that if you know that you can bundle these commands together, or you can, if there isn't a feature to do it, you can generally kind of program your own through a combination of other features, or maybe involving a little bit of scripting or something like that. So, you know, if it doesn't come out the box, you can generally build it. Just the customization level and that sort of flexibility, I think, is one of its main strengths. It makes it sometimes an interesting learning experience to get into that tricky side of it. But that's, I think, what people love about it. So,
cool. Good answer. That's great.
Hackability, the new term.
Well, you know, I'm out here in Silicon Valley and people love that term here.
Excellent. Yeah.
So, you know, that one's great. But, you know, hopefully worldwide that we'll coin a new term there.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so do you want to, what else is going on with T-Format? And you're going to submit a presentation for PTC User in June?
Well, it's not something that's come up on my radar at the moment. I'm pretty busy at the moment looking after the UK guys, and I really hope to get over there. I'll have to look at the presentations, but I'm pretty sure I'll be there. We're, like I say, busy getting back in touch with all the UK users, letting know that there is people out there to help them, and as well as busy getting up to date all our training materials with version 10, because it's been quite a shift from what we have traditionally into teaching about version 10. So that's Yeah, that's a recent project started, but I'm sure it'll be going on for some time with the level of detail that has to go into that. But yeah, it's very busy at the moment, so it's encouraging, yeah.
So if people are trying to learn 3B2, you've got courses and mentoring to help them learn to do that.
Yes, indeed, yeah. As I said, a number of years ago, we decided to rewrite the training courses. I think it was I was doing some training for PTC over in Japan, and that was difficult enough as it was, but I was using old, out-of-date training materials and kind of trying to update them and teach them on the fly as we were going through the translator. And after that, just decided, enough's enough. I've got to just sit down and redo them. So through that, we've rewritten a lot of the courses, and like I say, trying to now extend into new areas for the version 10, and also into some of the more murky areas of 3B2 that haven't traditionally been documented well. Some of the features, some of the tables, color handling, fonts, and things like that, that have always been a bit of a dark cloud for people to get their heads around. So we're trying to get that up to scratch and have that available for people that want to know it. Yeah.
Wow, amazing. That's cool. Yep. Well, maybe next year you'll be doing the training at the conference. That would be fabulous.
Maybe, yeah. We'll see what wonderful features the development team throw at us this time.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure when that next version is coming out, but I'm sure that there will be something in it.
Yep, I hope so. So.
Great. Well, I appreciate your talking with me this morning, Chris.
Thank you very much for the invite. It was good to talk.
It was great, and I think that it will go a long way to help bring APP up in the minds of the rest of the Arbortext community who hasn't really had a chance to ever see it or play with it.
I hope so. I hope all my jabbering made sense. So.
Me too. I know. I mean, I understood a lot of it, but there's pieces of it that I just, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out myself. So
indeed, yeah.
It's certainly a good start, and I've got I got a lot of questions answered. That's great.
Well, if you have any more, then hopefully we can fill in the gaps at a future date. So
absolutely, we'd love to do another one.
Great.
That'd be great. Cool.
The PubRide Podcast is a production of Single Sourcing Solutions in San Jose, California. Copyright 2009. Single Sourcing Solutions.